My name is Earl Davey. I'm from the University of Washington in Seattle. I'm a professor emeritus of biochemistry in the School of Medicine. I met Bert in 1951 or 52. I was, at the time, a graduate student with Hans Neurath, who was a friend of Bert's. And at the time, Bert was very much interested in trace metals, mainly zinc. And he came out to Seattle to work with Hans Neurath, who was my thesis advisor, to look at a pancreatic enzyme called, or protein called, carboxypeptidase, a pancreatic enzyme that was studied in great detail in Seattle.
What were your first impressions of him?
Well, he was a lively fellow and talked a lot and very knowledgeable and a good sense of humor, laughed a lot. I was a lowly graduate student, just starting more or less, and I was a little overwhelmed. Not a little, I guess I would say a lot. So I was one of only a couple of students that Hans Neurath had at the time. And Bert and I used to visit quite a bit, and then we got to be pretty good friends. And
what did you like about the way he worked, about his approach to science?
Well, Bert was a terrific scientist, and he was very precise and wanted to document all his experiments very, very well. So he was a very, very reliable guy, and when he did something, people usually said he was right. So over the years, I then would see him at scientific meetings, and he was very friendly. He often took me out for lunch, and I became acquainted with his wife, Natalie. We got to be unusually good friends because I was a lowly graduate student who meant nothing to him.
Well, obviously not, because he maintained that friendship. What was Natalie like?
Oh, she's very sweet, quite a bit different. He could be gruff and quick, and she was a very sweet lady. I knew her very well, too. So I finished my PhD degree in Seattle and then moved on to a postdoctoral fellowship here in Boston. Bert invited me out to his apartment, and he lived in Brookline at that time. So he kind of treated me like I was his long-lost kid and looked after me like a kid out of the woods that came to the big city.
Is that how you felt?
And that's how I felt, yeah. I thought being at Harvard was something super special, and I found that they were no smarter than me, even though they all thought they were. And Bert taught me one thing: if you work hard, you do very well here. Then as time went on, I saw him everywhere. And I would run into Bert in the craziest places. And then Bert was kind of a short, stocky fellow. Surprisingly, he was terrific. He loved to ride horses. And and his wife, Natalie, was actually pretty good at it. So I spent, I suppose, the last 15, 20 years in Montana with him for a couple of weeks or a week and a half or more every summer. Bert and I used to ride up into the high mountains and with a cowboy, and he told me lots of funny stories and about his life.
Can you
remember lots of them.
Any that you want to recount now?
Well, Yeah, there's one that he told me about how tough it was when he first came to this country. He was 18 or so, and he was hungry. And he landed in New York and lived on a very minimal wage from a fellowship. He knew what it was to be poor. And so he told me he was determined he was going to save his money. So he saved it very carefully and put it in the hands of some of the best friends he had. David Ogston, who's on the board, was an old friend of his, and Peter D. Roth and others. And before long, he saved enough money that he could do what he liked to do. And he always used to say, if I need to buy a new car, I buy one. And then he would say, and I guess he told me this many times, say, you know, Earl, I've been very poor and I've been rich. Being rich is a hell of a lot better.
I'm wondering about the scientific collaborations. Did those continue, those collaborations between you and Bert over the decades?
Yes, and we didn't actually publish much together, but we published a couple of very nice papers, and he was very proud of. He had worked a long time on a protein called angiogenin that would stimulate vascular growth. He purified, and they worked and worked and worked purifying it. Finally, they got it what they thought was very pure. And then it was kind of a protein that had hormonal-like activity. So it was very potent. And some rather sarcastic people said they didn't believe it. It was some contaminant in this protein. Boy, he was angry about that. And so I said to him, Bert, you know, you ought to really isolate the gene for that protein. And then you could express it. You express the gene, and you make the same protein that you purified from other sources. He said, I don't know anything about DNA. Well, then he said, you have to do it for me. So I was in Seattle, and I said, well, I have a good fellow that could probably clone it very quickly. I'll send him to Boston. That's what we did. One of my fellows by the name of Ko Karachi, a Japanese postdoc, came to Bert's lab and started working on it with Jim Reardon. That's who was Bert's other close collaborator for 20, 30 years. And in about a month, they were successful and isolated the gene, and it was expressed, and material that was expressed, that protein that was expressed from that gene, did exactly everything that the other one did. And Bert was very happy. I was too.
Satisfying collaboration. Successful.
Yeah, probably the most important relationship that I had had. But over the years, we used to talk about all sorts of things. And he said once to me, what do you tell your students? I'm curious to know what you tell your students. And I said, I try to teach them to be well prepared. And that means learn their studies well and learn how to do science. Be ready to be lucky. Be prepared to be lucky. And Bert liked that. Because if you're in science, you try all kinds of things that you think you might want to study that might be important. But if you're not well prepared as a scientist, it'll slip through your fingers. And Bert liked that, and I do too. I think that's a great thing to tell students.
Do you think Bert was good with other people other than you in terms of being a mentor? Was he a teacher in the broadest sense of the term?
Oh, I think so, yes. He had high standards, and Bert could be awfully tough at times. It was important to be honest, absolutely honest. And when he thought somebody was a little on the shady side, he was no longer Bert's friend. That's kind of the way it was.
You were in or you were out?
Yeah, it was a little of that, and, well, a lot of that. But you couldn't help from love the guy. He was kind of a second father to me because I was younger, and I grew up in the country and not very sophisticated. So he watched me grow up, I guess. Not that I'm all that sophisticated now, but over the years, I saw Bert in all over the world. I was in the restaurant once there in Copenhagen, and I looked over there, and there was Bert and Coogie. And I said, what the dickens you doing here? He said, well, Coogie and I like white asparagus, and we're on our way to France to have a dinner of white asparagus. And it was kind of unpredictable in that sense, and he enjoyed life. He didn't throw his money away, but he was very, very generous when it came to fine wine and good food.
And he took a lot of people out to dinner.
He took a lot of people out to dinner, and he enjoyed being around his friends, and particular scientific friends.
Do you think he saw the foundation as something for the future and as a legacy for him, or was it more about his life then, about being able to get people together and exchange ideas then, or was he thinking about the future when he started?
Well, he was thinking about the future because he and Coogie didn't have children, so the foundation, he was obviously wanted to spend his money wisely and having friends around that he liked, and being involved in science was what he enjoyed immensely. As I mentioned earlier, we used to go to Montana. It was in by West Yellowstone. We were at a dude ranch, and he'd rent a house there for a month or so. And then a lot of his friends came, and often these kinds of conferences were held there. We would go up into the ride up into the high mountains, and some of those peaks we would ride up on the old trails up to what used to be lookout towers for fire purposes. And those towers would be in mountains that were 8,000 and 9,000 feet. There was moose and elk and bears and everything around there.
Were you talking research, or was he telling jokes, or were you concentrating on the riding?
We were joking all the time. And we got up there at one time when we were above the timber line, and it was wide open, a beautiful, unbelievably beautiful country. There was a lot of open lakes, freshwater lakes, of course, and we would stop there, and we usually took a lunch or something with us. And Bert would say, you know, I'm kind of tired, Earl. I'm going to take a nap. So he'd tie up the horse and stretch out and take a snooze. And it was a lot of fun.
Big sky.
Yeah.
Long way from Boston, though. If he was to come in, if by some miracle he walked into this conference of the last 2 days here in Boston in 2014, the Valley Foundation and the meeting, what would he have thought of what's going on now with the Valley Foundation? How would he
Be so happy to be here today. And yesterday, he would be just in one big smile from one ear to the other. He would have been happy as a lark. He would have been very, very happy. And Coogie would be, too. She put up with all his peculiarities. And And like most all of us, we have plenty of them.
Idiosyncrasies.
Yeah. So I miss him. He was a good friend, and he was, I think it was many people will tell you, he was one of a kind. I don't know of anybody who was like Bert. He was one of a kind.